like the thing I'm trying to do is create more of a docu-series.
Yeah.
Instead of just interviewing people, because that's more of my background, is creating documentaries,
can
right?
Do you do some of the residents?
What?
Where you live, where you work.
Yeah, well, right now, though, I just want to tell our story.
Okay.
So it's a long story.
Yeah.
It's 41 years.
That's old.
Just joke. Longer for you.
Yeah. 66.
But I think it's important for people to not give up hope and that things can change.
Yeah.
So I'm just wanting to kind of capture that, you know, CBC style where they have like audio clips and things. That's my jam. That's my jam. I love doing that stuff. So.
That was a clip of my mother and I on a shopping trip together for the first time in 7 years. I captured that clip in 2018 and it's significant, but we'll get to that later. Sometimes I feel it's necessary to look back at where you've been in order to clearly appreciate the path you're on now and how far you've come. Welcome to the Familiar Strangers podcast, a series where my goal is simple: share my story and the stories of the people I've met along the way, so that you are reminded that we are all connected. Because whether you believe it or not, we truly are. The weeks following Otilia's death were a blur. Our lives turned completely upside down, but we worked together to hold each other up. I had not really cried over what had happened. It was as if my spirit had left my body in some weird way, and I was on optimistic autopilot. Every one of us clung to our idea of normal. The 14-year-old played basketball. The 16-year-old kept to herself and quietly hung out with friends. The 18-year-old immersed herself in high school graduation activities. The oldest daughter returned to Calgary. My brother became a shoulder for the girls to lean on. My mother took on her organizational role of caregiving with her little black book and calendar in hand. Dad did his best to accommodate everybody, and we all tried to make the sisters feel comfortable as they adjusted to their new lives. For myself, the 3-year-old and I bonded right away. I'm not going to use her name here to protect her, but she knows who she is. And someday, I hope that she'll hear this podcast and know how much I loved her, and still do. Having raised a 3-year-old only 3 years prior, I spoke her language and she felt comfortable with the fact that my son trusted me, giving her the green light for her to trust me as well. Being with her reminded me of innocence in a time when we needed to remember that it existed. I was just so glad that we had each other during that time, and amongst the chaos, we tried to bring normalcy back into our lives. I'll never forget Easter. It was a really special time. My mother always loved to spoil people on Easter. Even when I was in my 20s coming home from university, she'd always spoil myself and my friends. That Easter was special. Mom put everything she had into that Easter to help us feel joy. On Easter morning, you could feel the excitement of the young children hugging the air. My son ran into Otilia's daughter's room to wake her up. The Easter Bunny had arrived and he could not wait for her to take part in the fun. I filmed them both as they ran to the living room to see all the delicious treats in their basket. They hollered out to the rest of the house that there were baskets for everybody. Running around the house, collecting eggs in an Easter egg hunt, their joy rubbed off on all of us. I really felt like we were one big family that day. I was excited for our future together. Little did I know, at that time, how short-lived the joy would last. My mother was the queen of organizing. The job as the children's guardian became her new career, which filled the void of her having to leave her job. My mother was not a healthy person, and neither was my father, but Mom, she lived in pain 80% of the time. I watched her take on this job, but I worried about her. She had yet to cry for her friend beyond the day that she found out. As a spiritually conscious person, I was aware of the repercussions of holding in such pain, but my mother is a stubborn woman, and holding in pain had become a survival mechanism in her life. Ever since I had died and come back when I was a young child, I had these really weird abilities to see things in the future. I didn't really talk about it much, but my friends knew about it. Around this time, I had a vision of my boyfriend leaving, saying the exact words he said to me as he left. I began seeing people and relationships enter my life in detail a week before they arrived. Then, as I drove up the street on my way to my mother's house, I had a vision so horrible I had to pull the car over to the side of the road. My mother was going to have a stroke and die. As I sat on the side of the road, breathing heavy as my heart tried to leap out of my chest, all I could say out loud was, "No, this can't be happening. It's not real. I don't really have visions. I'm making this up." I tried rationalizing what I saw on every level, and then I had no choice but to let it go. I rushed to my mother's house. I went in and I tried to talk to her about it, but you know, she just saw me as that flighty, artsy person who liked to pretend she was intuitive. One thing that I did learn from my near-death experience was that I really know nothing, but I was worried about my mother. That I knew for sure. I talked to her about it and said, "Mom, aren't you scared? You're a walking stroke waiting to happen." And then she said to me, sitting on the edge of her bed, "Honey, everyone is going to die someday." I looked at her and I paused. "What makes you think you're going to be so lucky that you're going to get to die?" She paused. "What do you mean? If you have a stroke, why do you think that you'll get to die? What if you don't die and I end up having to wipe your ass?" That was my mother's worst nightmare, the thought of somebody having to wipe her ass. "Oh, honey, that's not going to happen. Trust me, I would never let that happen. You will never have to do that." "Well, I hope you're right," I said to her, "but you really have got to get your stress levels in check." And I left, and I went out the door, back to my house. When my boyfriend left me around this time, and I was thrown unexpectedly into the world of singlehood at age 33, I met this awesome young guy named Kyle. Weird enough, Kyle and I had met before. I just didn't remember. I guess the first time I met Kyle, I was the keynote speaker in his grade 12 art class, and that was actually the first keynote speech I had ever given. We began seeing each other, even though I felt he was probably too young for me. But it was the first time in my entire life I ever experienced the synchronicity of thought and connectivity as I did with him. I was afraid of my intuitive gifts before I met him, until one day he put it into a perspective that I needed to hear. Standing outside, smoking a cigarette, he breathed out, "Who cares? I mean, we see things. We can't do anything about it. It happens whether we like it or not, so just let it go." To this day, I will never forget the clarity I felt in that moment. It was awesome to talk to somebody who could help me check my ego when it came to fear and the ability to see things in the future. In the world of New Age, wellness, or whatever you want to call it, I felt lost. I never really felt like I belonged, which so many of us feel that way, I'm sure. I knew I had to live in this body, in this experience, but I didn't know how to do that with the insight I had, never knowing when I was going to have my next vision. That night, Kyle and I went out dancing. After coming home to my place to talk until the sun came up, we finally crashed into sleep. 45 minutes later, the phone rang. "Hello?" I responded, barely awake. "Hi, honey." My dad's voice sounded way too calm on the other side of the phone. "Your mother had a stroke and she's in the hospital and I'm gonna need you to come to the hospital right away." My stomach dropped. The room felt small. I couldn't breathe, yet somehow I got out the response, "I'll be right there." I hung up the phone. Immediately, I went into a state of anger. What the hell? What the hell, Kyle? Why do we have this ability if we can't do anything about it? I began gathering my clothes in robotic motion and filled Kyle in on what was happening, and then I bolted from my car. Mom had been suffering from a migraine for days, and at the time was trying to deal with a situation with one of the girls. Seeing as we all grieve differently, Mom really respected this, and she was trying to get help for her. That afternoon, they arrived home, and she felt hopeful. "Things are going to be different," she said with optimism. "We're going to start fresh. I feel great about everything. I really do." That night, while having a cigarette, Mom knelt to the ground and knew something was definitely wrong. "Call the ambulance," she demanded my brother. Knowing that the ambulance lights and the siren would trigger the girls and their post-traumatic stress in relation to the night their mother died, they requested the ambulance enter the house with lights out. They transported her to St. Martha's Regional Hospital and watched as she wrenched her body in agony, fighting the stroke in limbo between life and death.
Familiar Strangers is written and produced by me, Kara Jones. If you like the podcast, make sure to share it with friends and subscribe. Podcasts unfortunately cost money to create, and I'm trying to keep mine ad-free with your support. You can donate to the podcast by visiting my website, www.karajonespeaks.tv, or you can donate on my Patreon page, which is available in the description. Every little bit helps, and I thank all of you who support the project.